court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
You're back from the beach, Tommy. You got a healthy glow. Looking pretty good. Looking well fed on some low country boils.
I was too well fed.
Oh, yeah?
That's all we did was eat and drink.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do on vacation, isn't it?
I felt like a stuffed flounder by the end of the week. I could barely eat. I wasn't done digesting the last night's meal before the next meal came around. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so y'all ate well?
Oh, yeah, we ate well. I made my famous low country boil one night, and it turned out perfect. And I got to owe it. I wish I could remember the name. It was when I was doing the shopping for it that day to put it together. I was looking for the usual Old Bay crab boil that you get that you throw in with it. And I came across, and this was like Bob Johnson's low country boil seasoning or something.
Yeah.
And it was just a foil pouch with this just regular looking dude on there holding it up, and his motto was, "The only thing holding you back is your own imagination." So
it's pretty deep.
Yeah. So I said, "Well, I've got a big imagination, so I'm gonna go for that low country boil." And I put that in, and it was delicious. It was the best. I got compliments all the way around that it was by far the best batch I have ever fixed.
Now, was this Travis's first low country boil? Has he been exposed to that before?
Remember we did it for, was it Thanksgiving or Christmas?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He was there for that one.
Okay.
But he's gotten one of my low country boils. He's never been to a real low country boil restaurant and gotten one.
Oh, so he hasn't been to that place in Savannah?
No. No, we didn't get, because we were at Pawley's Island, yeah. So Savannah was a little bit too far to drive.
For a low country boil?
Yeah. The Crab Shack. That was where we first learned and fell in love with the low country boil.
Well, not much has been going on here this past week. I went to the football game yesterday, so my voice is feeling a little stretched right now.
It was all you could do to get him across the finish line with a victory, huh?
Oh, man. I left it all in the field.
Well, I watched it on Facebook, and it wasn't broadcast on TV, at least not locally it wasn't.
Yep.
And it was the first ever broadcast of a football game on Facebook.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I knew some people were talking about being broadcast on Facebook, but I didn't realize like that was the very first game. Marshall was the very first game ever broadcast on Facebook.
Marshall versus Miami of Ohio.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah,
Marshall won it for the record books.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. There's no commercials or anything, so everything just happens right there. It doesn't slow the game down with commercial breaks or anything like that.
Were there announcers?
Yeah, there were announcers, and they talked during the game, and they had sideline people, and the sideline people kept saying, "We want to see those comments. We want to see those comments. This is a Facebook experience, so we want to see it." Well, all the comments boiled down to, "Go Herd, Miami of Ohio sucks." You know, that was all they were. "No, Marshall sucks." You know, that was all it was, back and forth. There was no in-depth commentary or observations. It was just razzing the other guys.
Well, I mean, what do you expect?
I know.
It is Facebook. It's just like a step above YouTube comments, basically. Yeah. Well, on Facebook, one of our listeners posted a video, and it's kind of been taking the internet by storm, and it was posted by Terry Wagner, and she actually posted it just a few minutes before I did, because when I saw it, I actually posted it on the page and then scrolled through and saw she had posted it a few minutes before, so I went back and deleted mine. It's kind of funny.
They beat you to the punch.
Yeah. But it was the Utah nurse in Salt Lake City that was arrested for basically refusing to draw blood from one of her patients at the behest of, or I guess more of the command of one of the police officers.
That's like half of my motto when you're playing sports.
What's that?
If you can't win, draw blood.
It is. Yeah, that's true. I remember that. The other one I remember was if you're going to foul, make sure they don't get the shot off.
Yeah, you get your money's worth. That's yeah. right. Show me a good loser, and I'll show you a loser.
Well, this the incident took place, I guess, back on July 26th, and there was a crash victim who was admitted to the University of Utah Hospital's burn unit and was in a coma. And the victim, the man that was in the coma, was not a suspect for anything in the wreck, but the person who caused the accident was killed in the accident. And for whatever reason, the police were there on scene, and they wanted to have this guy's blood drawn. I don't really know why they would. He wasn't a suspect or anything like that, but they were like, we need his blood. So,
well, from what I understand, I read a couple of different articles on that. And what I understand is the officer made the statement several times, we want to prove that he didn't have anything in his system.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't make much sense.
Well, no, I mean, in other words, I guess what he was trying to appeal to the nurse saying is, we're trying to help this guy out. We're not trying to get him in trouble. We're not trying to pin anything on him. We're trying to help him out. But in fact, what he was doing was undermining his own argument by saying that.
Well, what happens if they take this guy's blood without consent or any reason like that, and the blood test shows up something that he's on some sort of drug that he's not allowed to be on? It could have, you know, tons of ramifications. So, I mean, it's just you don't want to do that. So the nurse, her last name was Wibbles. Which I really like that last name.
Wibbles wobble, but they don't fall down. but they don't draw blood.
Sometimes Wibbles wobble,
but they don't draw blood.
And she was the charge nurse in the burn unit.
She was the charge nurse.
Yep. And basically, she presented the officer. She gave him a copy of the hospital policy about blood draws and said that the request did not meet the criteria in the hospital policy. And the policy said that police needed either a judge's order, the patient's consent, or the patient needed to be under arrest before they would draw blood. And evidently this policy was actually worked out in cooperation with the local police as well, which is kind of funny.
They just forgot to pass it on to their officers.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, here's one of the weird things. The person who was in a coma was a truck driver, and he was actually also a reserve police officer in Rigby, Idaho. And he's actually, his regular job is a truck driver. And then the suspect who they were basically chasing, who ran into the guy's truck, it burst into flames when it hit his truck. So it left this other police officer, who was a reserve police officer in Rigsby, in a coma. And basically the Rigby Police Department, they said that they wanted to thank Wibbles, and they said, the Rigby Police Department would like to thank the nurse involved and the hospital staff for standing firm and protecting Officer Gray's rights as a patient and a victim, it said. Protecting the rights of others is truly a heroic act. So,
was this before or after they released her from prison?
Yeah, this is after. But it was a different police department's the thing.
Oh, the police department for the one that he was part of, not the ones that arrested her.
Yeah, so the real irony of this is that one police officer was trying to actually violate the civil liberties of another police officer, if you think about it.
Well, you know, sometimes they get too carried away, I guess.
Yeah. Now, Wibbles and her attorney, they said that they had met with the police department in the city, and they were trying to get them to educate their officers about the new policy. But they said that they were not encouraged by their discussions with the University of Utah Police and the Department of Public Safety. And that's why they went ahead and released this video, because they said that there was no forward progress with these meetings and that they wanted to basically make some change, have some change occur. So they put this video out.
Well, one of the things that they were resting it on, if I remember right, was implied consent.
Right.
And what exactly is implied consent?
Well, I believe all states now have it. And whenever you get a driver's license, you sign something that says that you give implied consent to submit to some sort of breath test or blood test for them to test you. So basically, when you get your license, you're already signing a consent for it. And if you do not give consent for these breath tests or these blood tests, then there are new crimes that happen you can be charged with, and your license can be suspended. So actually failing to submit to a breath test is actually a separate crime.
But there's one other thing they have to do that, right?
What's that?
Reasonable cause or reasonable suspicion or whatever.
Right. Yeah, they have to have something to do that. But here's the thing.
They can't just do it. All right, there was a wreck. Let's drug test everybody. let's draw everybody's blood and see what how it shakes out.
Yeah. No, you now, just can't do that.
If you found the guy's car loaded down with a bunch of empty whiskey bottles or beer cans or hypodermic needles in the back seat, then you got a pretty good cause to think something might have been going on.
Probably so.
and the thing that kind of got me about this case is if that's what they were doing, the nurse probably would have drawn the blood. If they had said, we have reason to believe this person, this is what we found, and we've got him under arrest, suspicion of DUI, can you do that? But because of the fact that they said, we want to do this to prove that he was okay, that he wasn't doing anything, then that took away reasonable cause and implied consent.
Well, essentially what happened is that if they did have some sort of probable cause, they could have applied to the court and gotten a warrant to search. Because basically, whenever you take somebody's take a breath test or you take a blood test, what that is, that's actually a search and seizure under the Fourth Amendment. And we talked about this in one of our previous podcasts a little bit, but basically I want to go back into the Fourth Amendment a little bit. And the Fourth Amendment says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And it doesn't actually say that it requires a warrant, but it does say that warrants may issue only in the presence of probable cause, among other things. So
simply because of the fact you get a driver's license, which you're mandated by the law to do to drive, doesn't mean you're consenting for everybody to take your bodily fluids.
Well, I mean, you are, and you could because...
But only under the right circumstances, not just carte blanche.
Right. And I'm going to talk about that a bit more. When I talk actually about the case, there's a case on point from 2013 that talks about this a little bit. And there's also been a bit of a split between whether or not a breath test versus a blood test, when basically the court has decided that a breath test is less invasive and therefore is probably okay to have the implied consent, whereas the blood test is not. So they talk about the court kind of made a split on that, which if you think about it, makes sense. I mean,
sure.
Having your blood drawn is a bit more... and intrusive than just blown into a...
Well, not only that, a breathalyzer is just going to say if you've been drinking.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no breath test for marijuana or, you know, amphetamines or meth or whatever. Whatever the, you know, drug du jour is.
So basically, the Supreme Court has interpreted the phrase unreasonable searches in that Fourth Amendment to require that police have probable cause and that they obtain a warrant prior to performing a search. So that's kind of the genesis of that. So the usual context for blood draws by the police comes from DUI cases. That's just kind of the most stuff that's out there. I mean, you might find other cases where this becomes an issue, but with you know, all the drinking and driving that goes on, this is the cases that come to the court most often. So typically what happens when there's an arrest for a DUI, the police see somebody operating a motor vehicle and they think that based on them crossing the lines or something they did that was dangerous, weaving in and out, that basically there's something going on there. And based on those observations, the police have what's called reasonable suspicion. So they have some sort of reasonable suspicion that something's going on. And so based on that, they can pull the person over and stop them for drunk driving so they can investigate the case further. So that's the first thing they have to have is reasonable suspicion. So there's something's going on. This is usually once they pull the person over, the police look at the person's eyes. They say, oh, well, if you read enough of these reports, they read exactly the same. The person's eyes were bloodshot and glassy, strong smell of odor.
Like, strong smell of alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. Or do I say strong smell of odor?
Yeah. he had BO.
Yeah. He's strong. The guy almost knocked me out.
He lifted up his arm and I fell over.
Cite him for assaulting an officer.
Assaulting and insulting.
And they might ask the person to get out of the car and do like field sobriety tests, have them walk a straight line, you know, those kinds of things.
I'm thinking of that one. What was it? Steve Martin. He had to do that one in that movie and he was walking on his hands and everything else, juggling. And
yep. There's some funny videos out there where people doing backflips and things like that, you know. And then there's someone where they actually don't land the backflip, but land on their face. And you're like, oh.
So. Well, I think I've said it before, but I just have to tell them when they got me out of the car, look, I got two bad knees, I got a bad shoulder, You got to, if I got to wave my arm around or try to walk a straight line, it ain't going to happen because I don't have any balance. I got vertigo.
Well,
I'm in bad shape.
They usually ask that question. They say, I want to have you do some field sobriety tests. Is there anything that's going to limit your ability to do these tests?
Yes.
And you're like, yes, yes, there is.
Yes, I have a lot of physical disabilities.
Like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this.
Well, I tell you the one that gets me. Have you heard them when they ask them to do the alphabet and then ask them to do it backwards?
Yes.
I couldn't do that. I'm stone cold sober and I couldn't do that.
Yeah. I got pulled over one time and they asked me to do some field sobriety tests and I actually had to do the alphabet backwards.
I couldn't do it.
Oh, I did it. I was scared poopless that I wasn't going to be able to do it.
But I mean, it would take me 20 minutes to do it.
Well, the way I did it is I ran through the alphabet forwards and then got to where I needed to be. And then I was able to throw a few letters out and then kind of run through it again and then go a few more letters.
Well, yeah.
that was the only way I could process it.
Well, right. That's what I'd have to do. I'd have to go all the way through, get a letter, then go all the way through, get the next one.
That's what I did. I was able to get two or three at a time, though.
But so. It would take me forever. It wouldn't be like reciting the alphabet, you know?
Yeah.
You'd do it in 10 seconds or whatever it is.
I think probably, if you are truly intoxicated, you're not going to be able to do that because you're not going to be able to keep track of where you left off and what you did. I think it's probably it was hard to do. And I don't know that I could do it right now, but I was running on adrenaline when I got pulled over though. I was like, oh my gosh.
You know who could do it easily?
Who's that?
Stephen Hawking.
Oh really?
He could just like push the buttons backwards and say, there you go.
That's probably true. I don't think he probably gets pulled over for suspicion of DUI too.
You don't
often,
think so? Is he above the law?
So based upon those different things, the field sobriety tests and the different things the police might observe, the officer usually will ask the person to take a breathalyzer test. And this is what is talking about implied consent, that most, I think almost all states have this implied consent law now where you agreed basically if you operate a vehicle in the state, you agree to do a breathalyzer test. And if the person refuses to do a breathalyzer test, then they can ask them to try to do a blood draw. And what would happen is they would, if the person is refusing a blood test or refusing a breathalyzer test, they're most likely going to refuse a blood test too. But what they can do is apply to the court and say, we want to get a search warrant for this person's blood. And the basis for this is that they have red glassy eyes. They have
odor of alcohol.
They were not able to do these field sobriety tests, and they refused to do a breathalyzer test. And that supplies the probable cause for the search warrant to meet the requirement under the Fourth Amendment. So in this instance with the Utah case, there was nothing, basically, there was no probable cause or anything. The guy wasn't being arrested. He was just driving his truck along, and some person running from the cops hit his truck and burst into flames and died. And this guy was left in a coma. And they're like, well, we want to test his blood. Well, they didn't have probable cause. And if you watch the video, he even says, oh, we don't have probable cause. He even says that in the video.
Yeah, that's so. What I mean. And he says, we want to prove that he was okay. So I don't know. It seemed like that he was a little overzealous trying to do the right thing. The only thing I could figure is he was trying to protect. You say that this guy was fleeing. He was a suspect and he was fleeing from the police?
Yes.
That hit him? Okay,
yep.
I didn't see that part.
Yeah, well, there's actually a video out there, and I didn't watch the video, but I saw a picture, and you can see because from the dash cam of the police that were chasing this guy, and you can see like a fireball in front of this guy's truck.
Well, then probably what they're trying to do is he was trying to mitigate any lawsuits that may come about later by surviving family or something.
Yeah.
That was saying, you know, this happened, and who, for all we know, this other driver, they might have been doing something wrong. Maybe they were impaired. So they were just trying to get everything in a row, clean everything up they could. You know, maybe that something like that had happened in the past, and so he was a little overzealous.
There is some litigation that can, for civil cases, it basically anytime there's a police chase and there's some sort of damage that happens because of that, it calls into question whether or not all the actions of the police in that chase were necessary.
Correct.
You know, because if they're chasing somebody for no reason or for things like that and it kills somebody, then the city could be liable for that. The police department could be liable for that. So I assume they were probably just trying to get his blood to probably see if he was or was not, in fact, intoxicated as well. Because if he was intoxicated or had something in his system, they might hang their hat on the fact that, well, hey, it's his own fault that this guy ran into and burst into flames. He hadn't been intoxicated. If he had not had this in his system, then he could have swerved the car and missed. So this whole thing, like, we're trying to protect him, that's BS. There's not real, I don't know why they were, I mean, that was just, you know, I'm not buying it is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, so you don't think that he was legit saying that? You think he really wanted to to get the blood to prove that he might have been doing something wrong too?
I think he was getting wanting his blood to protect his own police department's interests or his own city's interests.
Well, see, I thought I was giving him the benefit of the doubt that he really was trying to prove that. He was just going about it the wrong way.
No. I don't think he was trying to help that guy in the slightest. He was trying to help his own cause and his own police department, I think. So I can't think of a reason why else it would matter. He's like, well, we just want to show that he was okay. Well, BS.
Yeah. Calling BS on that.
Yeah. So now the case I talked about that has a lot to do with blood draws is this 2013 U.S. Supreme Court case, Missouri versus McNeely. And this was a case where it was a DUI case, and the police tried to argue that they did not need to have a warrant to have a forced blood draw from this Tyler McNeely. And what they tried to argue was that there were exigent circumstances, and that basically based on those exigent circumstances, they didn't need to have it. And so what an exigent circumstance is that's basically some sort of emergency situation which requires swift action to prevent imminent danger to life or serious damage to property, or to forestall the imminent escape of a suspect or destruction of evidence. So their whole argument was basically that the exigent circumstances was the destruction of alcohol, because in this case, they tried to say that the body metabolizing the alcohol or drugs out of this person's system created a destruction of evidence and thus was an exigent circumstance, and they needed to act swiftly.
So they had to go ahead and get it. They didn't have time to get a search warrant because by then it might, the alcohol level would be lower.
Exactly.
But they can do math on that crap. And it's like, if it's at this level now, what was it 3 hours ago?
Well, but you don't know that. They can't do that with any degree of certainty, because you don't have
as they have experts that can do that stuff. Well, I've seen it on TV.
The defense will have experts too, but you can't do that with any reasonable certainty.
Oh, well, then I say take his blood. They need to put some vampires on the force, and they just go in and suck it out of them and say, here you go.
Well, the court basically said in this day and age, you can apply for warrants over telephones or cell phones where you can talk to somebody. I mean, basically, technology has made it so this warrant requirement is actually not that big of a deal, and you should just do it anyway.
Well, that was one of my questions. Remember, that came up before, is it seemed like there were times where things got thrown out of court because they didn't have a search warrant, and they said you should have gotten a search warrant to do it. And my question was, why don't they just go ahead and get the search warrants every time? Why run the risk of we should have had a search warrant? And is it that hard to get one? I mean, do they take days to get, you know, or shouldn't there be a process set up where they have somebody that is like on the police department where, like, if you need one, you think you need one or something, you can call this person, say, here's what the situation is. We need one. Here's all the information. And then they got a judge they contact, because a judge has to issue it, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So I mean, they know who's on call. So in other words, it should be, you're right, with cell phones and everything, there should be a process set up where even if you're not sure if you need a search warrant, just get one. Wouldn't that be the best cause of action?
It is. But I mean, you got to think about the human factor here. And people are lazy. I mean, you've had some jobs over the years. How many shortcuts do people take at work and doing stuff? So basically, you have some sort of procedure you have to do at work. And it's like, well, you're supposed to do A, B, C, and D. But, you know, B's, old man Smurl over there at Tri-Data, he wants me to do this B and C, but that's BS. I don't want to do that. I'm just going to do A and D, and that'll get the job done. Makes my life easier. So that's why I think they generally do that. It's not because they don't have some sort of probable cause or the ability to do it, or they're worried that the magistrate or the judge won't sign off on it. I looked at a warrant this past week where it was a search warrant for somebody's house, and the magistrate had signed off on it, and it had the wrong address on it, but they searched a different house anyway. I'm like, the magistrate still signed off on it. Like
So they got the search warrant with the wrong address on it.
Yeah.
And so they went to the wrong house. So they went to the right house, even though the search warrant had the wrong address.
They went to the right house, even though the search warrant had the wrong address on it.
Well, wouldn't that make it invalid?
When it comes to argument time later on, yeah, that's going to be my argument, but they didn't find anything anyway. But
I saw one couple weeks ago, I guess, because before I went on vacation, where they got the warrant for the wrong address. It was they got the house across the street instead of the house they were supposed to go to. Mm-hmm. And when they broke into the guy's house in the middle of the night, he pulled a gun thinking somebody was coming into his house and they killed him.
Yeah.
Well, he was an innocent bystander that this happened. And I don't know what's become of that case, but I'd say there's going to be a significant lawsuit involved.
They probably wanted to draw his blood.
Well, they drew his blood, but they used a gun to get it. They didn't use a nurse.
They drew first blood.
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone would say something about that.
He drew
first blood.
So actually, one of the classic exigencies that the court has recognized as pertinent to whether or not police can have a search without the absence of warrant is the risk that evidence would be destroyed in the time it takes to get the search warrant. And generally, this is because police believe that the suspect is like located in a house and they have possession of drugs, which police think they might dispose of if they had to take 5 minutes to get a warrant. So they'll try to, you know, kick the door in right then.
Well, if you believe maybe a kidnap victim is being held in there or something like that,
yeah, or
then you've got reasons somebody is at risk and you don't have time to get a search warrant to do that. You've got to go ahead and do it.
The other classic one is that basically if you are chasing a suspect and you see them run into somewhere, you don't have to stop and like, well, I need to get a warrant before I can go in here after him. No, they're just going to come charging right after you. I mean, mm-hmm. You've seen that in the movies, haven't you? All the good cop chases.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, in this case, the dude was unconscious, so he could not give consent, and he wasn't under arrest, and there was absolutely no probable cause. So they were not able to obtain a warrant or arrest him either way. So they had no way to try to get the blood from this guy.
Well, they didn't try to obtain a warrant, did they?
No.
I don't think they even tried to.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. The police officer said, we can't get a warrant because we don't have probable cause.
And he relied on, I think he quoted that when you get a Utah State driver's license, that's implied consent.
Right. Now,
he misinterpreted the way that law works.
Right. And there was actually a subsequent court case where the court said that even these implied consent laws, they might apply to breathalyzers, but they definitely don't apply to blood draws.
Mm-hmm.
So even with this implied consent thing, it doesn't mean you could hold somebody down and take their blood without getting a warrant.
Now, I think the state of Utah, I don't know whether the governor issued something or the legislature did something, but they have come out with some kind of statement since this incident happened and said, this is not the way we're going to handle these kind of things in the future.
Yeah. I mean, if you have somebody and you think that they're committed some sort of crime and you have probable cause, then what you do is you state that probable cause on a search warrant or an application for a search warrant and have a judge sign off on it. I mean, that's the basic way you do it. I mean, you don't just say, draw that person's blood or I'm going to arrest you.
Well, the one you read about around here, and I don't even know if they have to draw their blood or not, is they'll find the person like crashed off the side of the road, not a bad crash, a low speed crash, and passed out behind the steering wheel with a hypodermic needle still in their arm. Yeah. Maybe a baby in the backseat crying, you know?
Yep.
And they find them that way, and then they have to give them Narcan to bring them back around. Well, is the fact that you give them Narcan, is that pretty much admission that they were taking drugs?
Well,
I mean, when they respond positively to the Narcan being put in them and they wake up and they're not dead anymore.
Well, they'll argue that basically that, oh, well, I didn't even need it. I've heard that before.
Really?
Yeah, they Narcan me. I didn't even need it. I was fine. They ruined my high.
All right, but
they owe me $20 for wasting that heroin.
Is that probable cause, though? If you give someone Narcan and they respond, is that probable cause to then say we're going to take blood to do it? Is that, wouldn't that be implied consent at that point?
I don't know that.
Hypodermic needle in your arm respond to Narcan.
The hypodermic needle in the arm is enough.
I would think so.
Now, the Narcan itself, you know, by having some sort of emergency personnel administer Narcan is probably not probable cause enough. Now, the things that led to that person deciding they needed to give you Narcan would be the probable cause.
Well, they're dead, basically.
No.
And you give them a shot.
Right. But you understand what I'm saying? The Narcan shot itself is not the probable cause. It's the things that led to the person who wanting to give them the Narcan would be what you would say.
Yeah, they weren't sitting there holding a regular conversation with the guy and said, oh, let me give you a shot of Narcan. Maybe it'll make you feel better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's basically all the things led up to it. And so one of the interesting things is, and the reason why you want to have this warrant requirement, to get a warrant permits a neutral and detached person, somebody who is, and this is cited from the case, not engaged in the often competitive enterprises of ferreting out crime, to basically take a second look at the evidence that's basically brought this to the police's suspicion. And then the magistrate who reviews it can determine, without having that same kind of competitive drive or really wanting to make the case, whether or not, you know what, does this Does this hold mustard or not? Mustard or mustard?
Pass mustard?
I don't know. Something.
Pass muster?
I passed mustard one time.
Mm, I don't want to hear about that.
So,
did you pass mustard gas?
So basically, the purpose of it is to get somebody who is not involved in the act of catching these criminals to look at it and say, yeah, I think that's probable cause. So.
Oh, that's good, because they don't have the emotions involved in it and everything else, and they should be able to say all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and this is proper, and any reasonable person would say this is a good reason and sign off on it.
I don't know what the stats are, but I would imagine the amount of applications for warrants that are declined for lack of probable cause are very few. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out here.
Yeah, and that's all I was getting at, is I don't understand why that's just not their common go-to. They should have if I were running the police department, I would have a chain of command set up where here's the number you call, here's the information you need to have.
Yeah.
Well, and then we'll call you back.
It's basically, it's good police work. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. There's no reason why you wouldn't do it. And the only reason I can think as to why people wouldn't do it is just the human error and being lazy. So now this other case I was talking about that kind of differentiated between blood tests versus breath tests is Birchfield v. North Dakota. And it's a 2016 U.S. Supreme Court case. And it was actually the consolidation of three different cases. But Birchfield v. North Dakota was the one that gets the name there. So all these
top billing. Huh?
Yeah, these other people, they're playing second and third fiddle to it. Basically, Birchfield was charged with violation of a North Dakota statute for refusing submission of a blood alcohol content testing. I can't talk.
Easy for you to say.
The issue basically before the court was whether or not the search incident to arrest doctrine applies to breath and blood tests. So is warrantless alcohol testing incident to drunk driving arrest to determine blood alcohol content a violation of the Fourth Amendment? And so what the court decided was that basically both breath tests and blood tests constitute a search under the Fourth Amendment, which we kind of already knew that because that is going to be a search and a seizure. But then they talked about the different kind of tests under the search incident to arrest doctrine and basically try to figure out the degree to which intrudes upon an individual's privacy and the degree to which it's needed for the promotion of legitimate government interests. So basically they're kind of looking at it like a common sense approach. Not just going in toto one way or the other.
How much protects the government and how much protects the individual's freedoms?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, the majority opinion said in addressing the limits of applied consent laws that prior opinions have referred approvingly to the general concept of implied consent laws, that there has to be a limit to the consequences to which motorists may be deemed to have consented by virtue of a decision to drive on public roads, and that motorists could be deemed to have consented to only those conditions that are reasonable in that they have a nexus to the privilege of driving. And so the court ruled in favor of Birchfield, who was prosecuted for refusing a warrantless blood draw, but ruled against this other guy, Bernard, who refused a warrantless breath test.
So they're saying the breath test is less invasive and you should have to submit to that.
Right. And then the other guy, he basically consented to a blood test after police told him he had to do it. So they sent that one back down for further whatever. So I guess
because the police lied to him, basically.
Well, they needed it said reevaluate Balin's consent given the partial inaccuracy of the officer's advisory. So basically, the police kind of misstated that he had to do it, and then he gave consent anyway. He's like, well, if you have to do it, so so I guess the result of this case was 1-1-1.
One win, one loss, and one tie. Huh?
Yeah, well, kind of a tie, or maybe
tie goes to the runner.
Yeah, don't run, good shot. So, but yeah, so the court kind of looks at the blood test as being the one that's like, well, that's a little. We're not really ready to go there, and it's probably a good thing too because I think taking somebody's blood just about as personal as it can get.
Yeah, I mean, where do you draw the line on that? And it also, I mean, it depends on, you know, what do you suspect them of? I mean, why would you want to draw their blood instead of take a breathalyzer?
Well, I think the reason being is that if the breathalyzer, the way those work is that you have to blow into something. You have to actually do it yourself. You have to blow into it.
Right.
And if you don't blow hard enough or don't blow, then it's not going to register.
So. This blows.
Yeah. Those machines, too, I've had some litigation over.
Whether they're properly calibrated and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like a lot of times those machines have, well, they come with certain kinds of manuals and schematics and things like that. And when they break down, they might fix them. They might put a different part on it or something like that. So they're actually not the same one that was originally certified because it's got these different parts on it. And then, you know, it might not be accurate. I don't trust those things.
That's like a lot of times the radar guns, you get out of speeding tickets and stuff because the radar guns haven't been properly calibrated or something, you know, they'll clock a cow doing 50 miles an hour or something, you know?
Yeah. And if you really want to push it with a speeding ticket, you can ask, if they're talking about they clocked you using their LIDAR machine doing, you know, 80 miles an hour, then you can ask to see the log books to see when last time it was calibrated. When did they use it? You can ask the police officer to get his certification. When were you trained with this? Did you actually train for this exact model?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can really go down a rabbit hole of stuff if you really want to. Same thing with the DUIs and those machines. I mean, because basically if you think a machine's been changed or is not up to snuff, then you, with discovery, can do all these discovery requests and just keep asking for it and keep asking for it and keep asking for it. And, you know, eventually you're either going to make somebody mad and they're going to really go after you, or they're going to say, oh, this guy, I don't want to deal with him. So let's cut him a deal. So, but yeah, it was an interesting case. I think we can all pretty much agree on this one that the police officer was probably not acting properly by arresting this woman, just basically doing her job.
I even heard that he contacted his supervisor on the phone, and the supervisor said, if she doesn't cooperate, arrest her.
Yeah.
So he's been implicated in it as well.
Yeah, they've both been placed on administrative leave, I think, as of...
Well, a partner was, too. I think all three of them have been placed on administrative leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think... you got to give that nurse some credit, though. I mean, that took guts, because it was no skin off her nose. I mean, really. You know, and she stood there and fought that battle and did the right thing. You know, we've had our HIPAA episode.
Yeah.
And that violates HIPAA right there, too, as well as your civil rights.
Yeah.
It also violates HIPAA. And she stood up and was doing the right thing. But, you know, there comes a time where, you know, you learn these things and you're trained in them. But do I know it well enough where I'm willing to get arrested to stand up for this guy's rights? You know?
Yeah.
That's pretty strong on somebody's part to do that.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, you got to really give her some credit for that.
I saw a video, and it was some lawyer who was actually had been stopped by the police, and they wanted to search her car. She's like, no. And they were trying to say, well, if you don't give us consent, we're just going to go ahead and get a warrant. And she's like, go ahead. And they got really mad. It was all on video, and it was
some of these people that know the law. And they go out and they look for some of these things.
Yeah.
And they know what to do. And a lot of times the cops, you can tell, you know, usually their tactics will get them what they want. And when somebody stands up and starts saying, no, it's not like that, this is what it is.
Right.
They're not really sure. And that makes me worry. You want your cops to know the law as well as anybody, you know?
Well, if you notice on like cops and things like that, they'll say like, you don't mind if I search your car, do you?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. They don't say, I would like to search your car. You have the right to say no. Can I search your car? They don't say that.
You don't have anything to hide, do you?
Yeah. We don't have anything to hide. Why don't you let me search it?
Yeah.
If you don't let me search it, I mean, I'll just go ahead and get a warrant.
I'll get a drug dog over here, walk around your car.
Yeah.
See what we come up with.
And I'll do that little click thing, like, and that's when he alerts. There's the whole thing where basically they're calling to question some of these drug dogs whether or not they actually alert on things, or they've been trained on how to make them alert.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Some shady stuff out there.
Well, your RoboCop would solve all of that.
That's right.
RoboCop is non-corruptible. He just goes out and does whatever the law is, and he would have a scanning. He would have like an infrared scan or something, and he wouldn't need to do a blood draw. He would just scan your body. Yep, you're drinking. You have drugs. Administer justice.
So would Judge Dredd.
Yeah, we've been through that. Somebody brought up who the guy was playing. He's actually been in a whole lot of things. I don't recognize the name, though. I'll tell you the truth. Maybe I know him if I saw his face. I know who it was, but I didn't see that version of Judge Dredd. I don't recognize that name. It's like Keith Urban or something, but it's not Keith Urban.
No, it's Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. So that's pretty close. It's Keith's brother.
Yep, you were close.
He must be from Australia. He's the acting Urban.
Well,
the other's the singing Urban.
I'm just going to tell you, I think you should watch it tonight. It's a great movie.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely.
I got a week's worth of stuff that we've DVR'd that I was on vacation, and about all we ever got to see was Teen Titans every day. Between Justin and Charlie, that's all they wanted to watch was Teen Titans.
Now, my favorite movie, police officer, I have to say, is probably Sylvester Stallone, Marion Cobretti.
Oh, yeah.
Cobra.
I remember that one, that car that he drove around.
Yeah.
That was a neat-looking car. What was the one?
You are the disease. I am the cure.
What was the one he was in with Kurt Russell?
Tango and Cash?
Yeah, Tango and Cash. That one. That was a good one, too.
That's a good one, too.
I like Kurt Russell.
We should do an episode talking about buddy cop movies.
Buddy cop. And what they did right and what they did wrong.
Yeah. I have a feeling Marion Cobretti is not applying for search warrants. You don't see him going into the magistrate saying, well, here's my probable cause, Your Honor. No, he just kicks the door down and shoots him.
That's right. You don't want him coming with a warrant that says dead or alive because they'll be dead.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we go over some different terms that we talked about. And I asked Tommy if he remembers what they mean. So the first one, I'm sure you can probably guess what it's going to be.
Probable cause.
No, but why don't you tell me what that is?
Oh, I'll just set myself up.
It's a trick question.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Probable cause means that you have some reason to believe a crime has been committed or somebody's under the influence of drugs or alcohol or something like that, and you have to be able to quote the reasons that you do, like glassy eyes or odor of alcohol or erratic behavior, driving, something like that.
And that is actually the standard that a police officer would need in order to obtain a search warrant when they put that to a judge to try to get a search warrant. They have to get probable cause.
You know what the flimsiest one to me is that I can't ever stand? Right as soon as I hear that this was the reason they were pulled over, that I say, something's up.
What's that?
You had a taillight out.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, is the one that they were looking for something, and you weren't doing anything wrong. That's just an excuse. And then I've seen them in movies before where they tell them, why'd you pull me over? Well, you have a taillight out. My taillights are working. And they walk back with their billy club and bash one out and say, are you sure?
Yeah. Looks like it's out now.
Yeah.
you looked impaired because you're driving with your eyes closed. Bam. Punch him in the face. Police brutality. Exigent circumstances.
Exigent circumstances. That means circumstances that are over and above, extenuating type circumstances. I don't know.
Right. It's basically an emergency situation.
Oh, yeah, because like the decaying sample or evidence or whatever like that.
Right.
Drugs might be flushed or the alcohol is metabolizing.
Right. Or there could be imminent danger. Or a suspect's about to escape, something along those lines.
Or it's almost the end of your shift and you don't want to make overtime.
Yeah.
Your wife will get mad. You come home late.
Now, which amendment protects against unlawful search and seizure?
Number 4.
Correct.
I choose number 4.
That's right.
I don't want to plead the 5th. I'm plead the 4th.
So, now the 4th Amendment requires that they have to get a warrant, which we said was probable cause. And what is the main exception to obtaining a warrant? We just talked about it.
You mean reasonable suspicion?
No.
Oh, to getting a warrant?
What is the main exception to having to get a warrant?
The main exception to having to get a warrant?
Mm-hmm.
If you get consent.
Well, that would be a reason too. But the other main exception is the exigent circumstances we just said.
Oh, I thought it was a trick question. We just said that.
Well, I know. I was just going back over it.
So if you had somebody was in danger or the evidence being destroyed and all that stuff.
That's the main exception you see for not requiring a warrant. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
Props to that lady nurse. What was her name?
Wibbles.
Wibbles, that's right. Wibbles, wobbles, but they don't draw blood.
Wibbles, wobbles, but they don't draw blood. I like that.
Yeah, she did a good job.
Yep, hats off to her.
Yeah, if they'd have got taken a blood test on me over this last week, they'd have found me filled with low country boil.
Your sausage and shrimp levels are extremely high, sir.
That's right. Hey, that thing was so well seasoned, you know, the potatoes and the corn, you didn't even have to put butter or salt and pepper on it. They were excellent right out of the pot. You didn't even have to add anything.
Yeah.
Just perfect.
That's how I like my low country boils.
It was the best batch I have ever made.
Perfect, right out of the pot.
Yeah, the shrimp were unbelievable.
I'm getting a little hungry now.
Man, they were good. I'm thinking about, you know, we ate it the next day, too. I fixed so much that we couldn't even eat it all. So the next day we put it out for lunch, and everybody ate on it at lunch, and we still had, it was the next day before we finally finished it off.
Mm. I can eat about 2 pounds of sausages, I think, right now.
Mm, they were good. I had hot ones and mild ones.
Yum.
Everybody complained that I made the hot ones first. They're waiting for the mild ones, but by the time I got the second batch out that had the mild ones, there was only 3 sausages left from the first batch, so they must not liked them too much.
They dealt with it.
They ate there. That's what they did. They ate them up.
So basically, in sum of the episode, you should give blood to the Red Cross and other people that are helping people, but maybe not to police. Is that safe to say?
Yes, especially with Hurricane Harvey.
That's right. We're not against all blood giving. Just
forced blood giving.
Forced blood giving.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.